On International Day of Disabilities, I'd like to say that it's really important to be able to break down the perceptions and negative judgments about blind people. As a blind person, I have hitchhiked around far north Queensland and have travelled extensively around Australia, travelling in trucks and cars and hitching on highways. And to me, that's really important, to be able to allow a vision impaired person or a blind person, whatever the terminology, to choose what mode of travel that they wish to pursue.
Hi, I'm Helen Gwilliam. You're listening to 3CR on International Day of People with Disability. Our next two speakers focus on adventures of a different kind, adventures in love, sex and disability. Matthew Bowden is an Executive Director of People with Disability Australia and an advocate for the rights of people with disabilities. At the first national conference of the Australian Federation of Disability Organisations in Melbourne this year, Matthew spoke on what he calls the last taboo, the sexual rights of people with disability. He begins by describing a startling vision he had one night.
The band Sigur Rós, for their single Svengi Englar, and I apologise for any Icelandic speakers who might be in the room for my pronunciation, they decided to engage for their music video a group of actors who are based in Reykjavik, a group of actors who all have intellectual disability. Many of them are people with Down syndrome. It's set in a kind of beautiful landscape in Iceland, a sort of grassy plain with rock cliffs around it, and the group of actors are sort of doing interpretive dance, maybe dressed as angels in sort of white kind of costumes, acting out a scene to the music. As the music faded out, there was a long kiss, a few seconds long, between two of the actors, both of them who have Down syndrome. The first time I saw this video was on Rage on the ABC. It was a late Saturday night. I'd fallen asleep on the couch and I sort of woke up and this video was playing. And at the time, most of my work background has been working in the area of sexuality for people with intellectual disability. I just thought, I've been working way too hard, or I've died and I've gone to heaven, one or the other. And so I was really struck by the video. What it made me think is that we so rarely see positive representations of the sexualities of people with disability, particularly people with intellectual disability, that we don't see that in our sort of mass or popular media at all. So I thought it was a very interesting and important thing that Sigur Rós and the actors who were in the video had been involved in. I've spoken about the fact that we don't have very much representation of the sexualities of people with disability in the media. So why do we need to advocate? Well, I think that we need to advocate because people with disability experience high levels of disadvantage, stigma, and discrimination in relation to their sexualities. And in that sense, I think that the issue of sexual rights is very much dealing with one of the last taboos around disability rights. I also think that linked in with this is the practice of and belief of eugenics, which is not something which went away in the Victorian era. I think it's very much alive, and we really have to watch out for it in the use of the information that came through the Human Genome Project and biotechnologies that are kind of resulting from that. And I think that in the area of where we see people with disability having difficulties exercising their sexual and reproductive rights, that eugenics is at the centre of it. The marginalisation of people with disability creates enormous risks and increases the incidence of sexual assault and sexually transmitted infections. I think this is another large area that we have to sort of focus work on. And as well as that, the negative attitudes held by many people in society about the sexualities of people with disability make people just feel very unfulfilled and really unhappy, and it has a direct impact on people's self-esteem and the way that they view themselves. In 1987, a colleague of ours, Anne Craft, developed a sort of charter of sexual rights of people with learning disability or intellectual disability. She spoke about people with disability having the right to sort of grow up, so not being seen as eternal children. And if you're, of course, if you're seen as a child all your life, then you're seen as a non-sexual being. She also said that people with disability have the right to know, about their own bodies, the right to know about other people's bodies, the right to know about information to do with sexual and reproductive health. People with disability also have the right to be sexual and to make and break relationships. So the element of dignity of risk comes in here, so that people learn from having their heart broken, from having, you know, poor or less than fantastic sexual experiences. She also said that people shouldn't be at the mercy of individual sexual attitudes of different caregivers, and that's something that really is quite potent in supported accommodation settings, where, you know, in the course of a week there might be 11 or 12 different support workers coming through that person's home, each of them bringing with them their own sort of moral judgments, values, religious beliefs, etc., which might sort of play out in the way that they support or create a barrier to the person actually being able to live out the choices that they want to make. She also said that people have the right not to be sexually abused. The rates of sexual assault in the disability community, particularly for people with intellectual disability and women with intellectual disability, are outrageously high. And, you know, many studies show this to be sort of 85-90% of women with intellectual disability will experience a sexual assault within their lifetime, unforgivably high. She also talked about the environments where people live being really critical to the sexual opportunities and the sexualities of people with disabilities. So she sort of called on humane and dignified environments. So move away from institutions and institutional practices that would prevent people from living happy, safer sexual lives. So Anne Craft was writing about that in the 1980s, and of course now we have the United Nations Convention, or CRPD as I'll refer to it. Basically, it was fantastic that CRPD spoke directly at the sexual rights of people with disability, the right to sort of marry and form a family, the right to receive family planning, reproductive assistance, sexuality education, to exercise rights. One thing that I was really delighted to see in the convention was around retaining fertility for both women and for children, particularly girls with disability, where, you know, it really spoke at the issue of sterilization. States have a responsibility to enable people with disability to parent and assist them in areas where they might need assistance. And it also spoke about including and keeping children with disabilities in families. It also spoke up the overrepresentation of children of parents who have disability in care and protection systems. It basically says that intervention should never be based on the parent having disability, but only should occur in the case of the best interests of the child, where there clearly is abuse or neglect occurring. And in the instances where family placement not being possible, that alternative placements must occur in family settings, which obviously speaks at children not being placed in children's homes or institutions when a family placement breaks down. So it was great that we got that. Sterilisation still occurs in Australia of particularly mostly women and girls with disability. There are excessive and extreme controls of the sexualities of women, and there seems to be an enormous fear, and I think that this also sort of ties in with the notions of eugenics, of women's capacity to have children and that those children might also have disability. And this is something that society seems to be really frightened of. Obviously, there are enormous negative sort of psychological and physiological impacts of a woman having sterilization without her consent or knowledge or being coerced into it. We also do work in the area of the sort of over-prescription or the readiness of doctors to prescribe anti-androgenic medication. These are medications to control the libidos of men where there's sort of unwanted sexual behaviour. However, we're often seeing this not being prescribed for men who are sex offenders as a part of a sort of treatment programme. But often men with intellectual disability who are masturbating more than somebody thinks that they should, or masturbating in a place where somebody thinks that they shouldn't be doing it. We're seeing anti-androgenic medication being prescribed in boys as young as, you know, 12 and 13 years old, where no other attempts have been made to educate those boys about where might be an appropriate place to masturbate, or any sort of education programs. It's straight to the drugs cabinet and, you know, slamming them down. I view this as a sort of form of chemical castration. We most commonly have seen this being used in men who are Aboriginal or men who are from other culturally and linguistically diverse backgrounds, and I don't think that that is a coincident or accident at all. The sterilisation of women has an enormous impact on them, of course. It also has an impact on people in their community. It has an impact on their partners. I've worked with men with intellectual disability who've spoken to me about their sort of sadness at not being able to be a father because of what was done to their partner and the impact that it's had on them and their relationship. So it's not just an isolated thing that only the woman who has the operation experiences. We do quite a bit of work around people with intellectual disability who are living with HIV/AIDS. Again, we see an appalling response from disability support services, health providers, and people in the community, where there's enormous amounts of stigma and discrimination towards those individuals, and a great attempt to control them. These are people that we see being contained, and often without any sort of approval from guardianship, where people are kept away for the benefit of, you know, supposedly for the benefit of the community. We've most often seen this occur for women who are living with HIV, for Aboriginal people, and again, people from culturally and linguistically diverse background. Again, I don't think it's an accident who we're deciding to keep away from our communities and that we think are dangerous or that we should be afraid of. People obviously have the right to information. Information means that people will be safe. This is one of the things that we advocate for. Access to sexual and reproductive health services is something else that we see as critical.
The National Disability Abuse and Neglect Hotline can be called on 1-800-880-052, or for more information go to their website at www.disabilityhotline.org.
Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.